This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. Whether it's a family physician, an internist, a pediatrician, or a nurse practitioner, primary care providers are often the first contact that we have with the healthcare system and our first line of defense in protecting our health. But how has the Affordable Care Act under President Obama affected primary care? What promises were made and what still remain? Here to shed light on all of this is Dr. Jim Greenwald, professor of family medicine and the director of the Rural Medical Scholars Program at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Greenwald.
Hello.
Thanks for coming in. So let's start out by fleshing out the role of primary care in this country. What exactly do they do for us?
Primary care physician is the first contact for a patient in the healthcare system. So if you have got symptoms and you don't know what those symptoms involve, you go to your primary care physician. About 90% of the time, maybe 95% of the time, your primary care physician is going to be able to help you deal with those symptoms, or if they discover something through a screening exam, help you treat that condition. 5 to 10% of the time, you might end up going to a specialist. So that's the way it should work. And when people have a long-term relationship with a primary care physician, there's lots of evidence that this is a really good thing.
Yeah, what do they do in terms of preventive care? Because that's also very important. I mean, we have acute care issues. Obviously, you have a high fever, or you fallen and twisted your ankle or something. Excuse me. But in terms of preventive care?
The preventive care has changed over the years. It used to be that everybody would have a physical at a certain interval. For newborns, it's maybe every few weeks. For the elderly, it's at least once a year, sometimes more often. Things have changed a little bit in that the physical exam is perhaps the least important part of the preventive visit, and a lot of it has to do with sitting down and talking with people, perhaps doing a few tests that have been proven to have a good outcome, whether they're mammograms or give them some shots, if they're needed.
Like vaccinations, for example.
Vaccinations. But things have changed over the years in that a lot of physicians are working that kind of stuff into routine visits that patients might be having for other reasons. So prevention is an important part of what we do, and there's good evidence that looking for certain chronic conditions at all ages, can be very helpful. And your family doctor, your other primary care physicians, always have a good idea what's needed for people in who are at normal risk and what people might be at high risk for,
like
other conditions.
Measuring your cholesterol, giving you, helping you with dietary concerns. If you're a diabetic, helping you, doing some counseling in that regard, those kinds of things, flu shots,
you
overall.
Bet.
What happens to people then when they don't have access to good primary care, though?
When people don't have access to primary care, their conditions often go to a point where they are much more serious, where they're even disabling. And so instead of coming in with just a little high blood pressure, they might come in with a stroke, or they might come in with kidney failure. And so studies show that people who don't have primary care in general don't live as long, and they're sicker in the amount of time that they do survive.
And also they might end up in an emergency room and admitted to a hospital with obviously the notion of our concern for healthcare costs, that becomes exponential in terms of the cost.
Absolutely.
The cost to the system.
Cost
well.
To the system, and in some ways, the cost to the individuals go up.
There's a new concept out there called a medical home. Can you help us understand what that is?
The medical home concept was actually developed by some pediatricians, and it's been popularized. At some level, it's kind of something that puts into words and puts into concrete practices what happens to a small town country doc where everybody knows everybody and people try to do their best to make sure that people's health care needs. So instead of just going to the doctor when you're sick or going for regular checkups, there's more to it with a medical home, that we try to link up in a powerful way with community services to make sure that the flow of communication is good, that we actually go out and hunt down people if they're not taking care of their health care needs. So if you've got somebody who's a diabetic and they're poorly controlled and they haven't been in for a visit or they haven't been in for their screening tests, and most practices are now starting to do this. We have nurses or we have people that we hire who call folks up on the phone and say, hey, it's time to do this.
To really make sure that they don't go over the deep, into the deep end.
That's right.
Basically to stay on top of their care and help people recognize what the warning signs and all of that are as well.
Absolutely.
They're trying to make a change in order to, and this is part of Obamacare, but it's been something that's been talked about for probably the last 20 years, is the idea of trying to bend the cost curve in the sense that healthcare is just exponentiating every year in terms of the cost to all of us. So they're trying to change, the health insurers are trying to change the way that they pay from a fee for service to a quality measure type of outcome-based care. How do you see this working?
At some level, it's begun already. And in general, organized medicine is in favor of this model. So for example, because our practice is a patient-centered medical home, at the highest level available, we get a little bonus from Medicaid, or we could choose to get a bonus from some other insurance care, from Medicare, for example, if we had more elderly people. But we've got a lot of kids and young families in our practice.
So there are some savings by your being aggressive in your care, in a sense, and then the incentive to you to do that is that you get some of that savings.
Absolutely.
You get some of those savings.
And so as time goes on, we're going to see more and more of payments coming to the system, and that the different roles that need to be done in the system, whether they need to be done by primary care physicians or whether they need to be done by community health workers or whether the care needs to be done by specialists, that we'll get incentives for keeping track of populations and for good outcomes, that our population has lower costs and better healthcare indices.
As opposed to doing more and more tests and various procedures just for the sake of being able to generate billing.
Yeah, the current system is called fee-for-service, and we get paid for seeing somebody. We get paid a lot more often for doing procedures than for talking to somebody or teaching them about their health care or trying to decide what the cause of a problem is. And the idea behind this population basis or bundled payments is that we'll be spending the money on the things that we ought to be spending it on and not getting any incentive for just doing stuff
that are maybe unnecessary.
It might be unnecessary.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, along with family practitioner Dr. Jim Greenwald. We're talking about healthcare reform and the fate of primary care. So what has Obamacare done to primary care? I mean, we've touched on some of these things, but has it made it better? Are we now paying for cognitive, for the stuff that the primary care doctor is doing in terms of counseling and talking to the patient and not only being paid for the things they actually do, procedures, that kind of stuff? Is that happening?
Yeah, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010 was a start, and we've certainly seen some good things. We see more patients in our practices who didn't have health insurance and now have health insurance. And, like I said, we've gotten some of these incentive payments for doing things to go out and make a medical home to help patients keep track of their problems in a more powerful way. Some of the whole overall goal of this was to get access for everybody for good health care in America, and also to cut down on the wasteful spending. We know that we spend a lot more for medicine in this country than people do in other comparable countries. And in spite of that, we don't have as good healthcare indices. So we wanted to reduce spending, make healthcare safer, make it more effective. And there's a general thought that there needs to be more primary care physicians, especially primary care physicians for people who are thought to be underserved, either in poor communities, in urban areas, and especially in rural communities.
So is that happening? And how has Obamacare had an impact on that?
You know, it's happening in little ways. There certainly are not a whole lot more primary care physicians, but there have been little, state by state, there have been little experimental programs which have started and have proved health cares for populations, such as, you know, there's, you know, little projects all over the country. If you look at the Obamacare website, it talks about, you know, Medicare patients in Pennsylvania and Medicaid patients in Texas and how little things have been done in those areas to make the health of those populations. But in terms of the overall United States, there's still a lot of people who aren't served well, and some of the initial changes in insurance haven't necessarily made it easier for people to get all the care that they actually need.
So in some sense, there have been promises made, as you've said, and as of yet, some of are basically unmet. Yeah. In terms of really meeting the needs of access for all.
I think a lot more could be done, and at this point, a lot of what has been done has in some ways made it more stressful on the few primary care physicians that we've got around the country.
In what way? In the little bit of time we have left, how has it made it more stressful?
More paperwork, more you know, justifying little expenses that we're doing for our patients, less time face-to-face with the patients.
More pressure to see more people?
There's certainly pressure to see, to do more in the time that we see patients, absolutely. And, you know, there just aren't people to replace us. There's some people who think that as many as two out of every three family physicians, you know, are thinking of retiring in the next few years. We're getting older, the primary care physicians, and we're not seeing people coming in to replace us.
Do you think this change of payments is going to, or the way that they basically healthcare is being paid for, will incent people to go into primary care, or the opposite, will drive them back into specialty areas?
I think in the long run, I think it's going to be a struggle for the next 10 years in many different ways. And I don't think family doctors are necessarily going to make a whole lot more money. I do think that perhaps the specialists are going to make quite a bit less.
So somehow, the hope is that it will balance out?
Yes.
Well, I hope you're right. I know we're in a transition, a large transition in healthcare, and I guess unless you had a crystal ball, it's pretty hard to see exactly how it's going to all turn out. But thank you for coming in and sharing your perspective with us. My guest has been Dr. Jim Greenwald, professor of family medicine and the director of the Rural Medical Scholars Program at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.